From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. Consider for a moment life without UPC bars, those little bands of black stripes on the sides of every single consumer product, or life without the Control-Alt-Delete function on our computers. These are two things many of us use every day, sometimes many times every day. And they are two breakthroughs, the UPC and the Control-Alt-Delete, that were developed at Research Triangle Park in the past 4.5 decades. RTP has put North Carolina on the technology map. It is home to some of the world's most innovative biotech and software companies, big and small. But like any big enterprise, RTP deals with its share of growing pains. Locally, traffic ties things up. And nationally, RTP is having to compete with several other high-tech centers. Which leads us to ask, what will the next several decades bring to Research Triangle Park? We welcome your calls this hour. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. What is ahead for Research Triangle Park? Has its mission been met? 1-877-962-9862. Liz Rooks joins us in the studio today. She is the Vice President of Development and Planning at the Research Triangle Foundation. Welcome to The State of Things, Liz.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And Monica Doss is President of the Council for Entrepreneurial Development, and she joins us by phone from a State Science and Technology Conference. Hi there, Monica Doss.
Hi there. Hi.
And Leonita Inge is also with us. Leonita Inge is the Changing Economy Reporter at North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. Welcome, Leonita.
Hi, Melinda.
Well, you know, RTP was the brainchild more than 4.5 decades ago in the late 1950s. It was the brainchild of university leaders from NC State, UNC, and Duke. And Liz Rooks, tell us about that original vision for RTP and how it came to be.
Well, you've got to remember that North Carolina in the 1950s was quite a different state from what it is today. It was a very, very poor state. Our economy was based on small-scale farming and on three low-wage industries, furniture, tobacco, and lumber. And the state had the three research universities that were strong. That was our asset. And the leaders of the state were looking for how they could capitalize on that asset. And the idea was to create the research park to try to bring research industry to North Carolina to create jobs because our graduates from the universities were leaving. They simply couldn't find jobs here. And the way in which it was done was through a private fundraising effort headed by a gentleman by the name of Archie Davis, who was a former state senator, former chairman of Wachovia Bank, and most importantly, a very charismatic individual. And he barnstormed the state, soliciting funds from individuals, from corporations, from financial institutions, and ultimately raised $2 million, most of it in the first 60 days. Mm-hmm. And these were not investments. These were contributions. There was no return to the people who gave the money. It was simply to do something for the good of North Carolina.
Were there other examples of something like this elsewhere in the country at that time? And this is the late 1950s?
Late 1950s, they looked at Silicon Valley, and they looked at the Route 128 area in Boston, neither of which are exactly what RTP became, but they were the only examples that we had to look at the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, for many people, RTP is now a very familiar aspect of life in North Carolina and in the Triangle. And even when I say that, I'm wondering, did we even call it the Triangle before there was Research Triangle Park? I mean, there were these three cities and three universities. But
that's true, but the term Research Triangle was coined in that effort to create the research park. Mm-hmm. And certainly what is the park has even morphed into this larger area. Many people think they're in the Research Triangle Park when in fact they are just outside.
Which gets to a question of borders and, mm-hmm. and the definition being rather fluid of what the park is. So in some ways it's been an incubator for other kind of research and development going on maybe outside of its borders, but
sure.
We speak of it as just drawing it all to the area.
Well, the park itself covers 7,000 acres. That's the legal identity of the park. However, we did a study in conjunction with our 40th anniversary, which showed in the 4-mile radius around the park, we had at that time 15 million square feet of floor area inside RTP. There was another 12 million square feet in business and technology parks that had grown up around RTP, and another 7.9 million in the Triangle area as a whole. So, yes, there is the park, and then there is this larger sphere of influence, I guess you would call.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, of course, a big part of it is that you have large companies that have moved here. In fact, 40 years ago this year, IBM.
Correct.
Set up shop. Huge employer for the area. Large companies have been a big part of RTP working, but how about smaller ones?
Small companies have also been very important, and in fact, spinoffs from the large companies in the park and from the universities have been important, not just in RTP, but in the entire Triangle area.
Mm-hmm. Now, Monica Doss, that's your area of trying to incubate and get these smaller operations started. How has that become harder or easier over the decades?
It's become a lot easier. I think I know early on, When we think about the park, people always assume entrepreneurship, but I think Liz would agree that, you know, the original goal was not that. It was really, you know, a knowledge economy, but that is what has enabled a lot of entrepreneurial companies to get started. So it's, while the park itself wasn't set up to create entrepreneurship, it created all the conditions to create entrepreneurship. Whereas back in the mid-'80s, we did a lot of proselytizing. We spent most of our time trying to convince people to start companies. That's not the case anymore. So we've kind of gone past that. Now we our real role is to help accelerate them.
Mm-hmm. We are talking today about Research Triangle Park, 46 years after it got started. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 1-877-962-9862. Well, as Liz Rooks mentioned a moment ago, Leonita, this was seen as this vision of finding another economy for North Carolina in the 50s, an economy that was very much based on agriculture, tobacco, and the mills. So is it seen as a remedy for the state in other places where there are still those struggles for finding jobs for people with mills closing down now?
I think actually in the last few years, a lot of people have been definitely taking note that the wealth of RTP has not spread to every corner of this state. And there have been actually some large meetings over the last even two or three years with not only just Governor Easley and his staff, but some past governors who've come together, you know, Martin and Hunt, you know, to even bring people together to figure out, okay, what can we do to make sure that, you know, the gifts of RTP, you know, would help this area flourish, that all the, you know, the wealth isn't concentrated here anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think there have been a few places that are trying to, you know, get a little bit of the attention. And of course, the biggest draw you mentioned, all the great acreage of RTP and all the smaller, or even other offices and companies that have built up around RTP. But if you go about 30 miles in either direction, the big talk is, we have the same things here. The land is just cheaper, you know,
yeah.
and that's the draw. And, you know, in places like Holly Springs and Johnston County and Lee County, you know, they're trying to pull some of that wealth their way.
Mm-hmm. Is that considered competition then?
No, I think that's just a furthering of the mission of RTP, which was to create jobs for North Carolina, not just for the Research Triangle region. And I think we would entirely support jobs throughout the state. In fact, one of the original ideas of the park was that you would bring the research jobs here to RTP and that manufacturing jobs would spread throughout the state.
Has that happened?
To some extent, not to the extent that I think the original founders had hoped.
Yeah. If you speak to the rural center, they'll say no, it did not happen.
Exactly. I mean, there are some cases that you can cite throughout the state, but again, a handful, not anywhere near as much as we expected. What we have found, though, is that all 100 counties in North Carolina have a connection with one or more park companies, either through sales of services or goods or something like that, which was very interesting when we did that study. I think that the kinds of things that we're looking at now is how do we, like you say, expand the impact of RTP throughout the state. Certainly having RTP's name puts the state on a list when consultants are looking to locate projects, and they might not fit in RTP, but where else in the state would they fit? It gets us past that first hurdle of being considered.
Mm-hmm. The original idea was to build a place where people who had graduated from the research universities could find work? Because before that, I presume they were going to those other places.
They were leaving
Silicon
the state,
Valley,
correct.
Or Route 128 mm-hmm. outside of Boston. So now we have this park for four decades. Is there something to be said for having all that concentrated in one place, or has the technology that might have come out of the park allowed it so that it could be decentralized?
Well,
you can do a lot of that research in other places. Do you need to be close to the company, you know, a mile away that might be doing similar work, or you could collaborate, or can you do it long distance?
Exactly. Long distance is becoming the new age, and I think as we look to the next 50 years, and how does North Carolina continue to compete and how does RTP continue to compete, those kinds of things have got to be taken into account.
Mm-hmm. Monica Doss?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I think that that's where we're going. I think that there is still an issue with innovation. At least we see it, particularly with startup companies, but I think it's true of others as well, that you know, there is a certain amount of combat sport to when you think about how it happens within a university, there is this proximity issue. So I think we're all going to be moving in that direction because that's the only way we can scale any of these activities. But it is still, it's not quite there yet, and I think that does lead to some frustration.
Okay. We are talking on the State of Things today about Research Triangle Park, what is to come down the line. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 1-877-962-9862. We'll continue our conversation with Liz Rooks, Leonida Inge, and Monica Doss in just a moment. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Melinda Pencava. Today we're talking about Research Triangle Park and the issues that it is facing at the moment, its plans for the future. And we're getting some of the history of this part of the triangle that many people who live here just take as a part of life here. But there was this history going back almost half a century with the idea of setting up a place that would incubate research and development in what was then farmland and pine forests. Monica Doss is on the line. She is president of the Council for Entrepreneurial Development, and Liz Rooks is here in our studio. She is vice president of development and planning at the Research Triangle Foundation, and Leonida Inge is a reporter at North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, who covers the state's economy. We welcome your calls, particularly if you're in RTP. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. And let's go to Bill, who's in Eflin. Greetings, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
I had a question about the relationship today between companies and universities. When a particular piece of research leads to a product that's sellable, who owns that application? I have read about academics working in a university, finding something, forming a company, and creating a product and selling it. Who owns the product and the money that it makes?
Well, let's start. Leonida, is there a clear-cut answer on that? We're talking about proprietary research that's been done.
Well, I don't know the clear-cut answer, but I know after attending some CED functions, when something does rise to the top and you know, becomes great, as they say, and they did it while on UNC Chapel Hill's campus. UNC Chapel Hill still has some mighty rights to that property, and I guess that's why you know, I've met several professors who, you know, they've left and started their own companies and mm-hmm. you know, been able to hopefully recoup some of their.
Liz Rooks, do you have an answer to that?
I don't know what the legal agreements are that the universities have. Monica might be able to help us more with that.
Monica?
Generally, the universities own what's produced, as does a company, unless there's some other, and I'm not a lawyer, so excuse me, I'll be fairly general, but unless there's some other you know, agreement that's been struck. But generally speaking, the host organization owns it, and then that is what gives rise to the technology transfer departments that whose job is to protect, I mean, basically to make sure that the university's interests are protected as something moves off of campus or out of a company. A lot of times the technology may go and be licensed to a larger company, in which case it's a fairly straightforward, you know, it happens all the time. It's, you know, two large institutions negotiating. But when it gets interesting is when it goes to an entrepreneur to create a company, because then, you know, it's a little more complex. And generally those tend to take, if you talk to the entrepreneurs, way much longer than they should. But it is negotiated at that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill, is that the answer you were looking for?
Sure, and I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks so much for your call. 1-877-962-9862 is our number. And Bill works in RTP. He joins us on the line right now. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi. Are you on lunch break right now?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, welcome to the program. Did you have a comment about RTP?
Yes, I work for one of the large employers there, and one of the problems of recruiting to people to work there has to do with where people can live, how proximal they can live, and the fact that the good schools are not uniformly distributed around that. I think as the RTP is going to grow, one of the things you're going to have to deal with is going to be the quality, the opportunity for people to live close to the park.
And when you speak of schools, are you talking about the public schools that employees would send their children to?
Yes.
Oh. Well, Liz, is that a recruitment problem for getting the best and the brightest to come to RTP, as opposed to, say, going to San Jose or Boston?
Sure. It's certainly an issue that we're grappling with, and it's certainly something that we've heard from the park companies, that they are very interested in amenities close to the park, residential close to the park. And, in fact, things are changing. When the park was started, everything was out from the park. We were separated by just undeveloped land all the way around. And today you're seeing stuff much closer to the park. There is a development on 150 acres that people will not be able to tell whether it's in the park or out, because it'll be down Davis Drive, and you'll drive through the park, you'll pop out of it into this development, and then back into the park. It'll have 1,800 dwelling units in it, a mix of office and commercial space, and will be tucked right in as though it were part of the park.
And that's seen as beneficial for getting people to come there who don't want to deal with a long commute.
Absolutely. They'll be able to bike and walk to work. Mm-hmm.
But as I understand, RTP was somewhat restrained from having any residential development within its borders.
They deal with research and research applications uses. So there's
that's
the covenants.
Zoned for
yes.
That.
There is also a state law that was passed in 1985, which limited the park to 25 dwelling units, which was probably how many old farmhouses were in the park at that point in time.
25, we're talking single-family homes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like I say, what we're seeing happen is residential around the park and butted up to the park, so that you're not going to be able to tell what's in, what's out. I know, because I know what the physical boundaries of the park are. A layperson driving down Davis Drive isn't going to know what's in, what's out.
Because you're saying one side of Davis Drive is in the park and the other side's out.
I'm saying if you drive south on Davis from 54, you pass BASF, then you come into this 150 acres that's going to be on both sides of Davis Drive, then you pass back into the park at Azai and Biogen.
Liz, do you think that will promote some public transportation within the park? Because I know one of the issues in transportation has been, you know, the park is so large, so if you brought people to the park, then where would you take them? But do you think that will stimulate some transportation within the park?
Well, right now you have the TTA bus system, which does have shuttle buses that distribute people throughout the park right now.
That's the Triangle Transit Authority.
Yes, I'm sorry, Triangle Transit Authority. I suspect, and also actually the Data bus from Durham also serves the park. Obviously, the more housing and the more mixes of uses that you get in close proximity, the greater the demand is for that kind of public transportation.
Well, Bill, thank you for your call. Now, Bill did raise that issue about recruiting people to come there and that the housing could be an issue. I'm wondering what other challenges RTP might face in competing with, say, the Silicon Valley or Route 128. Typically RTP is ranked third as one of these technology centers, Nexus. Is it bad to be in third place? Is it just a matter of finding your own niche and going with that?
We are certainly striving to be the top research park, not only in the U.S., but in the world. And I think you'll find that we compete internationally. There are a variety of factors that people look at when they're judging research parks, and in some we are top and in some we're not.
I'm wondering, though, I've heard it said that, say, Silicon Valley would be dealing with software and computers, an emphasis there, and perhaps up near Boston it's more with LEDs and lights. And around here, what would the emphasis be? If you had to make the pitch for a company to come to RTP, industries that would be well-suited to come to Research Triangle Park?
The pitch we make is the research strengths at the three universities. That's how we've marketed the park ever since it began, and that's how we continue to market it. The areas that we're strong in are the IT and telecommunications, biotechnology, chemicals and environmental science, and electronics, and pharmaceuticals and health sciences.
Okay.
And you know, one of the interesting things is the diversity of that list, and this is one of when you talk about competing with Silicon Valley and competing with Boston. One of the reasons that we've, had fairly steady economic health is because of this diversity of industries. And what we're seeing, and I know Liz is seeing it too, is that out of these combinations, you're starting to see some other new strong industries, the medical devices and the nanotechnology mm-hmm. industries that really feed on the fact that we have this diversity of industries that are converging together.
Okay. Let's go to Lynn, who joins us from RTP. Hi there, Lynn.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. Welcome to the show.
Good. I was just listening to Liz Brooks, and we're old friends. Hi, Liz.
Hey, Lynn. How are you?
I'm pretty good. And I've been following the project that Craig Davis has been pushing forward out there on Davis Drive with great interest. I think it's a wonderful idea. And Liz is aware, maybe not in detail, but go ahead and share this with you, that my company we're almost through with the zoning package with Durham County for a roughly 200-acre project on the north side of the park on Ellis Road, contiguous to Glaxo and Reichhold, and that'll incorporate approximately 700-800 homes and a shopping center and some office space and so on. And so we hope to see that project busting loose sometime in the next 6 or 8 months. So just thought I'd share that with you.
Well, I guess I'm wondering, Lynn, and perhaps Monica and Leonita and Liz may come in on this too. So that would solve, if you put up 700-800 homes, that brings housing closer to the park for people who want to work in the park. It also adds 700 or 800 homes and a lot of cars to the traffic mix there, too. So I'm wondering if you're solving the housing problem, but we're putting that many more cars right on the roads, right in the middle of RTP. How are there any solutions to take care of what many people who work in the park say is perhaps their number one problem, which is just getting into that traffic mess at the end of the workday, beginning of the workday?
Well, one thing, Ellis Road, and we're really doing a lot of road improvements there. We're going to be five laning Ellis Road along around the interchange. But on top of that, the people will be, they'll be right there at their jobs. I mean, talk about bike trails and so on. You can walk to Glaxo or Reichhold, if you can't stand the Durham Expressway for 1 mile to get over IBM, no matter what the traffic is, it couldn't be that bad. So, we're going to be putting traffic on the road, but we're also going to be taking it off the road. Instead of a 20-mile commute, we're looking at 1 mile, 2 miles, that sort of thing. So I think it's going to be, that's what we've needed at the Research Triangle Park for a long time, and to get people where they can get to work in 5 minutes and maybe have a shopping center close by that they could conceivably even walk to, if anyone will walk. But hopefully, we can start.
That's the subject of another show.
Okay.
Well, Lynn, thank you for your call.
All right, bye bye.
Monica Doss, there on the line. Did you want to comment on this issue of traffic for people who work in the park?
Well, I think that it is not well, it's a minor headache now, and I'm one of the lucky people. I live out in, near Mebane, between Hillsborough and Mebane, so I'm 35 miles away, and I have a 35-minute commute because I come down 147, and I don't have any stop signs between my house and here. But so I'm kind of disturbed to hear that I will now have traffic like everybody else. but I do think it's more something to think about as we go forward. Right now, obviously, you know, we complain about our traffic, and that's kind of a joke to anybody who lives in Boston or anyone who lives in Silicon Valley, because we don't really have traffic at that scale. But I think for us to kind of, again, be thinking about maintaining and being number one, that this is an area where if we're smart, we can, you know, if we're creative, we can avoid some of the mistakes of the other areas and have that be an advantage as opposed to a problem.
Mm-hmm. Ted joins us on the line from RTP, and I'm going to make a leap here and assume that you're working in RTP today, Ted, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. What's your comment?
I just wanted to raise the issue that other than RTP being wonderful for the region and for North Carolina as a whole, that for companies in the park, it is a wonderful asset, large companies in the park. The smaller the company, the less that asset, I think, is positive. For the tiniest of companies, it is actually, there are a few issues that are negative for the smallest of companies.
Such as?
One, the postal service here in the park is typically a large company would have like a big central office for mail to come in, and they'd have place for mail to be distributed. What happens here in the park is we have a postal service here where those boxes are now provided to those bigger companies where they send somebody out to pick it up, which requires the smaller companies to buy mailboxes in the park. So it benefits the larger company by keeping them from having to have the office space requirements for their postal services, but it requires the smaller companies to pay more to get that delivery that is should be provided to all entities at no charge, technically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one example. Another tiny example, I mean, which is not covering the whole park, but some regions within the park itself, there is the Triangle Transit Authority, for example, which really helps a lot of people who can take a bus into the park, change and get to their either businesses, or change and get from, say, Chapel Hill to Raleigh by going through the park. Their station, the TTA station in the park, is actually on private property, of which the renters or the businesses that rent property in that area have to actually pay for the streets that those buses are damaging.
Okay. Well, I'd like, Liz Brooks, perhaps you can address some of what Ted was bringing up there.
Yeah, I believe Ted and I have communicated on the post office issue before. He is correct that the requirements of the Federal Post Office was in order to have a Research Triangle Park post office, they would not allow that to be an on-site delivery. It could only be post office boxes. And as I understand, that was an agreement made in the early 60s, mm-hmm. And we live by it today. There's not been anything we've been able to do with the post office about that. As far as Triangle Transit Authority, they have a bus terminal in the commercial area in the center of the park, and I guess that's what Ted is referring to as far as the buses going on those streets. Ultimately, the bus terminal will be moved down to a station in conjunction with the rail system that will be coming along the east side of the park.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, one issue with the traffic, with trying to address it with public transit, would be that by its very nature, the park is spread out rather than built up. So you don't have that density. And even if rail does go into the park, Just people, they're going to have a very long hike to work from, from their rail stop. Is that not the case? Leonita?
Well, they will, but I know there are also plans in the works to make sure there's actually new housing around those stops to encourage, you know, people to use the rail, leave their cars at home, and provide them with, I guess, a decent place to live. I know in Durham, near Duke University, in that area, you know, they've already identified, you know, where one of the main stops will be, and housing is already looking up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Monica
and,
Doss?
Yeah, and, you know, we're kind of picking on little things that, you know, I talked about the post office because I've been there for 15 years and I'd totally forgotten about it. It's such a part of life. It's done, but you know, one of the, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater here because, I mean, it is such a unique environment. I mean, it could use a few Starbucks here and there, but it is this campus atmosphere is something when people come from other areas, and we are in the park, when people come to our office, they sense this kind of peacefulness, this lack of commercial activity around us. It feels much more as a place where, you know, we work and we think and, you know, we play outside, things like that, because of the land that's there. And you know, so there are some pluses there as well.
Okay. Monica Doss, thanks for being with us. Thank you, Liz Rooks. Thanks, Leonita Inge. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Doss is President of the Council for Entrepreneurial Development. Liz Rooks is Vice President of Development and Planning at the Research Triangle Foundation. And Leonita Inge is a reporter here at North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. She covers the state's economy. Just ahead on the state of things, Durham's lively jazz scene.